Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning to everyone and welcome to this hearing in the Idaho Supreme Court sitting at the University of Idaho College of Law. We understand we aren't mic'd, so we'll do our best to use our outside voices today and hope all of you can hear us. This case presents an appeal in the state of Idaho versus Paul Cody Stonecipher. The appellant here is Mr. Stonecipher, represented by Jason Pintler. Good morning. The respondent, state of Idaho, is represented here by Casey Jones. Good morning.
Good morning.
Counsel, do either of you have any preliminary matters prior to your argument today?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Pintler, you may proceed, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. Paul Stonecipher pleaded guilty to possession of methamphetamine, preserving his right to appeal the denial of his motion to suppress. The evidence Mr. Stonecipher sought to suppress was discovered as a result of a traffic stop that evolved into a drug investigation. Mr. Stonecipher asserts that at the point the officer abandoned the initial purpose of the stop and began the drug investigation, the officer lacked an objectively reasonable articulable suspicion that Mr. Stonecipher or the occupants of the vehicle were engaged in criminal activity, and therefore his continued seizure violated Mr. Stonecipher's Fourth Amendment rights. In late May of 2020, Mr. Stonecipher was driving his truck eastbound on Interstate 90 when he was pulled over by Trooper Green of the Idaho State Police for equipment violations and for a suspected altered temporary tag. The vehicle had bench seats in the front. Mr. Stonecipher was the driver. Ms. Tabitha Mosco was in the middle seat, and Rodney Harrell was on the passenger side. And in the back, there was another bench, and there was a couple of small bags, apparently, and some luggage bags. While pursuing sort of the routine mission of the stop, asking questions about where you're traveling, running, driver's information, that sort of thing, Trooper Green learned some facts. He learned that these individuals had said that Mr. Stonecipher was giving Ms. Mosca and Mr. Harrell a ride from Northern California to their home in Montana. They had been in Northern California to visit Mr. Harrell's uncle, who was sick with COVID, and Mr. Stonecipher was friends with Mr. Harrell's uncle. He also saw a torch lighter in plain view on the center console area of the vehicle, and he saw a walkie-talkie near where Mr. Harrell was seated. And he also observed the physical characteristics of the individuals. They varied from nervousness to extreme nervousness. Trooper Green saw signs of what he associated with all three of them having either in the past or recently used controlled substances. So when dispatch called back and said, you know, there's Mr. Stonecipher's license is valid, there are no arrest warrants, at that point, Trooper Green abandoned the initial purpose of the stop and began a drug investigation. Now, the parties agree that the initial stop was valid and that there were no issues with anything that Trooper Green did up until the point where he began the drug investigation. When asked what facts he observed that led him to believe that he had suspicion that the occupants of the vehicle were committing crimes or there might be drugs in the vehicle, Trooper Green mentioned what I would characterize as three different categories of information, one being the travel plan and route of the individuals, two being the torch lighter and the walkie-talkie, the item seen in plain view, and then three being the mannerisms and the physical characteristics of the individuals involved.
What about the furtive movements that he alleged to see?
Furtive movements is I would say it's one of those terms that doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. What he ultimately described was he saw lots of arms moving around. That is certainly something I would include in terms of nervousness of passengers. It's something officers should certainly look at, especially considering officer safety concerns, and should approach the vehicle with caution.
If an officer approaches a vehicle and sees three people with their arms moving about as if they're moving stuff around or hiding something or getting something out, doesn't that give the officer some reason to be suspicious?
I think it's part of the overall analysis.
Part of the totality of
the circumstances. Part of the totality of the circumstances. Absolutely. No. I wouldn't say that it's not part of the totality of the circumstances. But when I mentioned just calling it forward movements, that's a generalized term that, you know, what are you actually seeing? And what he said was he saw arms moving around. So truly, in describing the totality of their mannerisms, their nervousness, that sort of thing, I think that would fall into that category.
So you lump it in with their affect.
Yes, I would, Your Honor. Thank you.
What about the altered temporary license?
Certainly a valid basis for a seizure, Your Honor, for the stop. I'm not sure what else there is to say about that. He wasn't, ultimately, Mr. Stonesacker wasn't charged with anything related to there being an altered temporary registration. He said that that's how he got it from the dealer. The officer ran the VIN number and it came back, and there was no, you know, it wasn't reported stolen or anything along those lines. But that was certainly part of the valid basis for the seizure itself. I don't think that necessarily relates in any way into whether or not there was reasonable suspicion for suspecting that they were engaged in other criminal activities specifically related to drug possession. But it's going back to sort of the travel route issue. Trooper Green testified that oftentimes when you pull people over, they will try to use means to try to make them not get close to them. You know, he said that he gave an example of oftentimes people will tell them that they had just come from a funeral to try to get people away from them. There's a couple things I'd say about that. One is that I think it's pretty typical that when people are pulled over, whether they're transporting narcotics or not, they don't really want officers up in their business. It's the same thing I would equate it with nervousness. It's a common characteristic, I would say, that people have. And I would suggest that you should give this a little weight. And I want to go back and say, of course, the court looks at the totality of the circumstances when making a determination as to whether or not there's reasonable suspicion. But in order to make that analysis, I think it necessarily requires looking at each of the individual factors identified by the officer to make a determination as to how much weight you should put towards those factors.
You just said that we should give that little weight. Isn't the issue how much weight the trial court should have given that?
Of course, Your Honor, but on appeal, this court fully reviews the application of the constitutional principles to the facts found. So this court is certainly reviewing the district court's decision.
So how much weight did the district court give the nervousness and some of the other things like the use of I-90, the gas mileage of the pickup and those type of things?
I don't recall the court mentioning the gas mileage, or I think he mentioned the route in general as being I-90.
He mentioned that was a drug corridor.
I believe that the officer testified to that, and I think that the court agreed. But what I'd say about the idea of there being a drug corridor, I think that frankly should be given middle weight. This is Interstate 90.
Right. So the point of my question then is, shouldn't we just be looking at what the court relied upon and determine whether or not the court acted properly in relying on those things?
I believe the analysis is that this court fully reviews the constitutional principle for the facts found. So certainly, I think, I would say it this way. If the court specifically said, well, I'm just going to disregard anything you say about their nervousness or the officer's belief that they may have recently or in the past have used drugs, I think certainly this court could look at that and say, no, that was a factor the court could consider in terms of the overall analysis. But I guess if you're asking to me, does this court just simply defer to what the district court is doing, just making sure that the district court...
That's a little more complex than that. Don't we usually let the trial court be the fact finder?
Sure.
And then we look at the facts that were found, and if there's substantial and competent evidence for those facts, we see if the law was applied correctly.
Exactly. I don't think I'm disagreeing with you, and if I am, and I'm stating this incorrectly, I apologize for that. I'm simply pointing out that when this court looks to see whether the district court correctly found whether there was an objectively reasonable belief or reasonable suspicion that would justify the further seizure, that part of that requires this court to look at the facts that were presented, certainly review the district court's ultimate conclusions and analysis. But ultimately, this court is freely reviewing those things to determine whether or not the court's application of the constitutional principles to the facts found supports the district court's ruling. So, again, getting back to Interstate 90, I would just argue that, you know, pretty much every road in America probably at some point, somebody has transported drugs down. I would assume that at some point during the history of this fine institution that we are privileged to be able to argue these cases in front of today, there may have been one or possibly two students at some point that pulled over and you know, narcotics were found in their vehicle. That, of course, does not make, you know, this campus a known drug corridor or somehow add to the analysis as to whether or not there's reasonable suspicion that when somebody has been pulled over on campus that they might be transporting narcotics. Now, getting into the torch lighter and the walkie-talkie, those things I think certainly this court can and should give more credit to or more weight to as compared to the travel log, but still I think these things should be limited, or the weight should be limited. Trooper Green testified that in his training experience, the people he comes across with who possess these torch lighters tend to be using them for ingesting controlled substances. But he also recognized that these are legal items and you know, you can buy them at golf shops and or excuse me, cigar shops and what have you. And I know that in his training experience, his job is, of course, to look for people who are, you know, possessing, using, transporting controlled substances. I imagine that if you worked at a golf shop in his training experience, you know, these torch lighters would be used to light a cigar somewhere on the third fairway. As far as the walkie-talkie is concerned, again, in Trooper Green's training experience, he knows that, that sometimes, apparently, drug traffickers will essentially use pairs of cars. They'll essentially have one vehicle that will have the drugs in it. One vehicle will be, I wasn't quite sure if it was somebody who was following them, or, you know, it's like a smoking the bandit situation where you have a lead car looking out for a police officer or what have you. But nevertheless, he associated walkie-talkies oftentimes with use or the transport of controlled substances. But again, in that factor, I think that we should be somewhat limited in this case because when Trooper Green asked Mr. Harrell about the walkie, Mr. Harrell shook it and said it doesn't work, and of course, Trooper Green does not believe him. But nevertheless, we don't have actually any facts that this walkie-talkie actually worked. We don't have any, you know, no one called in while Trooper Green was there. And you were talking about the further movements, Your Honor, in terms of arms failing around when he first started following his vehicle. It's notable that he didn't testify that it looked like someone, you know, reached for a walkie-talkie or that sort of thing, which he presumably had. He, you know, once he pulled the vehicle over and saw the walkie, he might have said, oh, that's what he was reaching for, that type of thing.
Mr. Pamela, it sounds like you're suggesting that the judge gave too much weight to the evidence.
I hope that I'm not making that suggestion, Your Honor. I'm coming to the point of the most difficult part of my argument. I'm simply pointing out that when you look at the totality of the circumstances, the weight that you give to each circumstance is, in some way, you just compare it to, and I know this is probably not the right way to say it, but how much of this particular thing, this fact, can you relate directly to people who are transporting drugs or doing some other, or engaging some other criminal conduct versus potentially innocent explanations?
Just because there's a benign explanation doesn't mean that weight can't be attributed to it.
And that's exactly why I try to characterize my statement saying I'm probably saying this the wrong way. That's absolutely true, Your Honor. And just because something has an innocent explanation, that doesn't mean the court has to assume the innocent explanation is the correct explanation. But again, going back to the I-90 being a known drug corridor, that should be given, frankly, I think, zero weight because tons of people drive out every day who aren't transporting drugs, so you would call it a non-drug corridor. In other words, there's nothing specific about driving down Interstate 90 that makes it more likely or not, or more probable or more reasonable to suspect that somebody is transporting a controlled substance.
Now, what about Trooper Green's opinion that the occupants were all three, as you said, either shortly before or recently had used narcotics? Seems from your brief that you're arguing, well, he's not a DRE, drug recognition expert, so his opinion should not be counted in any way Was that objection made before Judge Mitchell, and if not, how are we able to weigh that in the balance?
Sure. First off, I'm not saying that he doesn't have any experience, or that the DRE somehow makes it any observation that he makes is less reliable. I'm not making that argument. I'm simply pointing out that it is well established that when a driver of a vehicle has glassy eyes and oftentimes we associate it odor with an alcoholic beverage, that's going to be a reasonable suspicion that somebody is under the influence. And in Cooper Green's experience, he saw these physical characteristics, we call it shallow cheekbones or sunken cheekbones and flaccid facial muscles, and he attributed those things with past and recent drug use. What I'm asking the court to do, though, is look again at the totality of the circumstances. He was asked during on cross-examination, are you a drug recognition expert? And he said no, which I think if you have a drug recognition expert, I think that would essentially, his observations should carry more weight. That's not saying that his observations shouldn't carry any weight. I want to make that clear. I'm not arguing that. But I also really couldn't distinguish between somebody who is under the influence of illicit drugs versus somebody who is under the influence of prescription drugs.
But all three of them? I mean, you have three of them that are exhibiting the same characteristics. I mean, it seems to me that argument is a lot harder to take.
I understand your argument, but that's the argument I'm making. This is, again, you look at the totality of circumstances, and I fully recognize that this. I'm not dismissing that these facts happened or that these are the observations that were made. But at the same time, again, it's not illegal for Mr. Harrell and Ms. Moskett, if they were under the influence of prescription drugs, to be riding in a car under the influence of prescription drugs. Now, of course, Mr. Stonecipher, driver can't be under the influence of any drugs. I would note, though, again, that he was pulled over for an equipment violation and this potential temporary tag issue. There was no indication that his driving was impaired. He did not, typically observe any sort of weaving within the lanes or crossing the center line or anything like that that you might associate with driving under the influence.
But he did have a vehicle that didn't comport with the laws of Idaho.
That's correct, John.
And so you're not contesting the fact that there was a reasonable suspicion to pull him over?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The stop is valid. The questions that Trooper Green were asking while conducting the mission of the stop in terms of running, information and waiting for retention dispatch, we do not assert there are any issues with that whatsoever. We are just, this is one of those strange cases where we're really the only, I think the only sort of legal sort of, in these cases when probable cause arises or when reasonable suspicion arises, I think the state and Mr. Sunside agreed because Trooper Green told us, at this point, once I got dispatch returned, I abandoned the purpose of the traffic stop. I began the drug investigation. We were just talking about at that point in time.
But didn't Officer Green testify that he thought he had reasonable suspicion before he got the return from the dispatch?
Yes. And again, that's not the – whether you have reasonable suspicion or not is really – at that point, it could be that Mr. Stonecipher and the passengers could be seized, I guess, for multiple reasons. One is a seizure based upon stemming from the traffic stop. And then two is at whatever point Trooper Green – made the determination that he believed he had reasonable suspicion that there may be drugs in the vehicle, they could be seized at that basis. I'm simply noting that if this is a circumstance where Trooper Green said, this is where, once I got the returns from dispatch, I abandoned the purpose of that stop. And that makes sense because the dispatch coming back saying, by the way, there's no arrest warrants, and Mr. Stonecipher's license is valid, and there's no indication that the vehicle is stolen, that doesn't really add to any reasonable suspicion about whether there are drugs in the vehicle. It's just sort of, in this particular case, an easy point where we can all agree that this is when the initial traffic stop effectively ended and the solely based upon a drug investigation began.
So, counsel, can we tell from the judge's ruling whether or not he put too much weight on the factors that you think weren't entitled to a lot of weight? If we're looking at this for error, I mean, this is the kind of discretion that we vest in our trial judges. I remember having a case just like this when I was a district judge in which a prosecutor was arguing that the presence of onions and sushi on the passenger seat gave reasonable suspicion they were trying to mask drug orders. You know, I rejected that because there was a burning candle on the dashboard that I thought was probably suspicious enough. But, I mean, can we look at these findings in this case and say that the judge put too much weight on something improper?
I'm basically asking this court to review the application of the constitutional principles found by the district court and make a determination that there is not reasonable suspicion. I'm not asking this court to look specifically and say Judge Mitchell, you know, shouldn't have done this or
let me try this a different way then. Can you articulate what you think the trial court did wrong here?
Our argument is that the trial court erred when it found at the point that the officer abandoned the initial purpose of the stop, there was reasonable articulable suspicion to conduct a drug investigation based upon the information and the facts as found by the court at that point in time.
So what was the shortcoming? What was wrong with that conclusion? Your argument is kind of conclusory, and I guess I just need to know more specifically, what did the trial judge do wrong?
Again, you know, I guess maybe it's conclusory because I'm making more of a conclusory argument. I mean, these were the facts that were presented to the court, but there's no challenge to the facts. There's no challenge to, Trooper Green's credibility or anything along those lines. This is the appeal that we have. You know, the thing about being a public defender is you have the appeals you have, and the facts you have, and the law that you have, try to argue based upon those things. I would know it had, of course, obviously Mr. Stonecipher not exhibited signs that should have been attributed to being potentially having recent and past drug use. But of course, those are the facts that we have. So I guess I wish I could answer your question more specifically. I apologize for not being able to, but I simply argue that under this court's duty to review the application of constitutional principles to the facts found, I'm simply arguing that in this case there was not reasonable suspicion that justified the further seizure at that point in time. And unless the court has any further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Whitmer.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ma'am?
May it please the court. As opposing counsel has made clear, there is really no dispute here about the law that applies in this case. There's really no dispute about the facts here. All that this court is being asked to examine on appeal is whether the facts that Corporal Green testified to credibly, taken in light of his training and experience, amounted to reasonable suspicion to justify the extension of the stop. And the district court did not err when it concluded that that was the case. The first and most important factor here is that all three vehicle occupants appeared to be under the influence of drugs. I understood opposing counsel to have said that, it's standard and well established that when a traffic stop is conducted and there is the officer believes the person is under the influence of alcohol, that that's reasonable suspicion. The same is true with drugs. If the officer believes that a driver of a vehicle is under the influence of drugs, that's reasonable suspicion to investigate that further.
Do you think the facts here rose to a level where the court could have, where the officer could have asked for a field sobriety test?
I do. I do think so. And I think that the record demonstrates he didn't do that right then because of his concerns with all of the other things going on inside that vehicle. But certainly we don't just have a driver here that seems impaired. We have all three vehicle occupants that seem impaired, again, by controlled substances, not alcohol. And that belief by the officer was further bolstered by the fact that there's a torch lighter in the vehicle. He testified extensively regarding his training and experience with drug interdiction, the fact that he sees torch lighters hundreds of times a year, and he could not recall a single case where he had seen it and it had been innocent. And that torch lighter was sitting in the vehicle next to what was clearly an object concealed in a bandana, which is also significant when you consider the fact that he recognized that in the center of the vehicle, Ms. Mosco was the one he attributed furtive movements to. So he has these suspicions already. Then you go to the fact that all of their demeanor changed markedly when he asked about drugs. I recognize that nervousness generally carries very little weight. But this isn't just nervousness at a traffic stop, which I'm sure all of us have. This is a marked change in demeanor, significant nervousness brought on by being asked if there were any drugs in the vehicle. He testified that Stonecipher, for example, looked defeated, put his head in his hands, and leaned against the window in response to that question. That's certainly something the officer can consider when examining whether he suspects drug activity in this vehicle.
What about the reference to a tattoo? Should that have been given any weight? I recognize the tattoo that he reported seeing on the left eye appeared to be maybe racist or have something to do with violence, maybe perhaps prison. But do we allow officers to look at tattoos and use that as a basis for reasonable suspicion?
Yes, I believe so. It wasn't just that this tattoo is associated with a gang that may have racist ideology. He said that this was associated with gangs that are known to deal in drugs. And so certainly this may not be the strongest factor here, but it is something that he can consider.
Well, probably most gangs, though, have some drug connection. It would just seem to me that if we're going to start looking at tattoos as a basis for reasonable suspicion, that's a pretty slippery slope, don't you think?
I don't, because reasonable suspicion is reviewed in the totality of the circumstances presented. Had this just been I-90 and the passenger has a face tattoo associated with a gang, that would not be reasonable suspicion.
If he had a teardrop on his eye or if he had a derogatory comment about the police on his forehead, could he cite that for reasonable suspicion?
Unless he can explain in his training and experience how those connect to drug activity, I don't think a mere slanderous slogan about police on his forehead would be sufficient. But here, he did testify that it was related to drugs.
I guess my concern is, should it even be part of the totality of the circumstances? Is there not a First Amendment concern there?
I believe it is part of the totality of the circumstances, but even if this court were to discount that, there's ample circumstances here that support reasonable suspicion, even if that's taken out of consideration. For example, their travel plan. Harold and Mosca indicated that they had traveled from Montana to California to visit Harold's uncle who had COVID, and then Stonecipher, who they apparently had no connection with but was a friend of the uncle's, was driving them back to Montana. Corporal Green testified there were several things about that sparked his concern. They were traveling along a drug corridor. He testified that a current trend is drugs moving east to places like Montana from states like Washington and California. He testified that people consistently use excuses to try and distance themselves from law enforcement or cut the interaction short, such as claiming to have COVID or been exposed. And that's particularly significant in this case because when he asked, "Oh, how's your uncle doing?" they didn't know. And he found it very suspicious that they would have traveled all that distance, purportedly to see an uncle who was sick, and then have no idea how the uncle was doing.
I mean, isn't every interstate a drug corridor?
That's probably true, yes. And again, that factor in and of itself does not carry much weight, but taken in the totality of the circumstances, it does. This is not merely a vehicle traveling along a drug corridor. This is a vehicle traveling along a drug corridor occupied by three individuals, all of whom seem to be under the influence of drugs, with a torch lighter that is commonly recognized as drug paraphernalia sitting right there, with a travel plan that doesn't really make sense. Again, these people claimed, Harold and Moscow claimed to have really no association with Stonecipher aside from him being their uncle's friend, and so the officer found it very strange that he would have volunteered, apparently out of the goodness of his heart, to drive him over 1,000 miles to Montana in his vehicle. That certainly...
I want to return to Justice Mueller's question about tattoos. So currently I have two law clerks, both of whom have visible tattoos. So is that reasonable suspicion if they were pulled over for drug interdiction?
No, and the state is certainly not saying here that the presence of a tattoo in and of itself is reasonable suspicion, or a tattoo in general is going to be suspicious at all. That's not what the state is saying. The only thing about this tattoo that was relevant was the officer's recognition of the tattoo as being prison ink and related to white gangs that are known to deal in drugs. So any other tattoo that the officer may have viewed that did not have a known connection to a drug-dealing gang would be irrelevant. A visible tattoo in and of itself is absolutely not going to be reasonable suspicion. And again, the state is not saying that the tattoo itself is reasonable suspicion here. It's simply one of the facts known to the officer at the time that contributes to the totality of the circumstances here. And again, even if that factor were removed or not viewed by this court, there is still sufficient facts that give rise to reasonable suspicion here.
Can you tell if the trial court put in appropriate weight on that one factor?
The trial court didn't specifically go through and say, I find this factor to carry 50% of the weight, this factor to carry 10. It didn't break it down by that. It did find that the officer was credible. It did find that the facts to which he testified gave rise to reasonable suspicion of drug activity. And again, those factual findings are not challenged on appeal. And additional facts that the officer testified to that supported reasonable suspicion here were the smoking of the cigarette. That's relevant for two reasons. First, he testified that it's common for people to begin smoking cigarettes in an attempt to mask the odor of controlled substances in the vehicle. And also, as discussed previously, that torch lighter is commonly used with drug paraphernalia, so it's really significant to the officer that there's a lighter right there, and instead of using that lighter to light a cigarette, Harold pulled a different lighter and lighted it, and again raised the question, well, what is this lighter for if it's not for lighting cigarettes?
But didn't the smoking of the cigarette happen after the officer had abandoned the original purpose of the stop?
No, Your Honor. My understanding is that it happened while that was still going on, while he was still speaking to them before dispatch returned.
Okay, because when I read Officer Green's, Corporal Green's testimony, the prosecutor follows him or walks him through the video of the traffic stop. And as I read that testimony roll out, he talks about the cigarette after he talks about receiving the return from dispatch. Was there somewhere else that he testified about the cigarette?
I apologize, I don't have that before me right now. My recollection of the record is that it happened while he was talking to them before he got the return from dispatch. It's clearly not visible on the video given the angle that it is, and so if chronologically he discussed it later, it could be because that wasn't something that was depicted on the video, but my recollection is that that occurred prior to the time that the traffic stop here would have been abandoned.
But even if we set the cigarette aside, do you still believe there's enough in the totality of the circumstances to justify his pursuit of an investigation?
Absolutely. It's the state's position here that reasonable suspicion could arise in this case based on the fact that the driver of the vehicle appeared to be under the influence of drugs. Combine that with the fact that the two passengers appear to be under the influence, the fact that there's a torch lighter, which is common drug paraphernalia, sitting right there, the fact that all of their demeanor changed markedly when the officer asked about drugs, there's certainly enough for reasonable suspicion, even removing the tattoo, even removing I-90, even removing the cigarette.
I want to clarify the record. I thought it was a Bic lighter that was used to light the cigarette.
It was not the torch lighter.
Not the torch lighter.
I apologize if I misspoke.
Okay, I was getting confused. So you used the Bic to light the cigarette,
yes.
But we don't know what the torch lighter was being used for.
Yes, and that's the aspect of that Corporal Green found significant. Agreed. So unless there are any further questions, the state would ask that this court affirm the district court's denial of Mr. Stonecipher's motion to suppress.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, how much time does the respondent have remaining?
8 minutes, Your Honor. Sir? I'll just make a couple of points. Justice Murray, you mentioned could the officer have asked Mr. Stonecipher to perform field sobriety tests. I don't dispute that the officer could have. I'll note, and I recognize this happened after the officer said that he had reasonable suspicion. So it doesn't go into the analysis overall. But once Mr. Stonecipher got out of the vehicle, Trooper Green testified that he thought he didn't meet the points of driving under the influence at that point in time. Again, I realize that that's not a fact known at the moment that the officer abandoned the initial purpose of the stop, but just to sort of answer your question. As far as the tattoo is concerned, I certainly think that my reading of Trooper Green's testimony on that, and although he did mention that prison gangs deal in drugs, I thought it was more really his officer safety concerns, that he was concerned that maybe Mr. Harrell had previously been in a gang. And so for officer safety concerns, that would essentially, I think, lead to him to be more cautious, make sure, like, hey, I gotta watch this guy, I don't know if this person's violent. I know that he also had returns that had cautions associated with Mr. Harrell, but those are separate analyses. Whether or not you have reasonable suspicion to see someone is a different analysis than whether or not you have reasonable suspicion to believe that the person is armed and presently dangerous.
But the state isn't trying to justify the deviation by claiming it was done for officer safety, are they?
No, my point is that I don't think Trooper Green was trying to make that point either. He was asked about the tattoo. He was asked about, I think Mr. Harris said Riverside on it. My reading on that was did that raise your concerns? And he was like, yes, I'm basically being cautious around that person. But I think that was a separate issue in terms of...
You don't think it should give any weight to the reasonable suspicion of possession of drugs?
Yes, I agree. I just wanted to make sure that I don't think that information was, completely irrelevant to what Trooper Green did, but that had more to do with making sure that, keeping his eye on, making sure that this didn't become a violent situation as opposed to whether or not they were actually at that point in time committing a crime. As far as the issue with Mr. Harrell's uncle and COVID, I guess I was disagreeing that is something that is odd. This happened in May of 2020. This was about 3 months into the pandemic in the time period in which I call everyone the freak out time period of COVID. It was spreading rapidly. There was still not a whole lot of information. You knew you could get it. You knew that some people unfortunately got really sick and passed away. I don't think it's odd at all that someone wouldn't know if they had visited someone like COVID how they were doing because, this is a rapidly evolving type of circumstance. In other words, it's not like an acute incident where there's like a car accident or a heart attack and you go visit someone and the doctor can say, yep, prognosis is good, they're going to do a lot better. With COVID, again, it's an ongoing type of thing and some people recover, some people... at the time on ventilators for a while, some people never recovered. So I just argue that, again, overall with that particular rate, I would give it very little.
But isn't the whole concept of going to visit someone with COVID antithetical to what was going on at that time? I mean, we were all staying home.
Potentially for some people, but for other people, going on there was COVID's no big deal. It's no worse than the flu. Everything's fine. It's all a big hoax. I think the president called it a big hoax. So I wouldn't say that just because people went to visit somebody who had COVID that somehow shows that you can't trust what that person is saying. Some people would go visit some people with COVID, some people wouldn't. And that's just the point that I'm trying to make about that.
Didn't Trooper Green, as I recall the testimony, was that he was saying that people were giving this type of excuse so that the officer would stay away from them.
Yes.
Basically, you don't want to come near me.
Yes, I was pointing out that the point of him saying that he thought it was odd that they wouldn't know how he was doing or would go visit him, to me, I don't think that's odd. This is, again, May of 2020. There was a different world that, people look at things. People looked at COVID differently. As far as the lighter situation is concerned, I will tell you, I'm a former smoker. You can take it from me that you cannot, well, you probably can, but there's no reason to light a cigarette or two lighters at once. So grabbing a big that's near you as opposed to a different lighter that's away from you, I think probably doesn't really add anything to the analysis. Again, it doesn't take away from Trooper Green's recognition that torch lighters can be used to ingest controlled substances. I just, again, note that this seems not particularly... compelling.
Hold on a second, on the lighter. You're going to use a torch lighter to light a cigarette? I mean, aren't you going to burn the thing up? I mean, a torch lighter, I've seen people light cigars with torch lighters. I mean, and it takes some real effort there, and I can imagine that it'll burn through a cigarette in an instant.
I can tell you that I've never used a torch lighter. I don't recall. I probably smoked a cigar at some point. I can tell you about, two lighters at once, probably not a good idea or worthwhile, but I guess I can't opine on whether or not a person who smokes cigarettes generally will or will not use a torch lighter to do so.
And it calls into question, why do you even have a torch lighter in the center console, doesn't it? I mean, the fact that he's smoking a cigarette and he gets a Bic lighter out to light it, don't those two circumstances together even more so call into question, why is there a torch lighter in the center console?
I think it's really part, again, of the analysis that Trooper Green attributed that particular torch lighter to the ingestion of controlled substances. And again, I'm not discounting that. I'm just saying that, you know, oftentimes there's more than, again, in my history, there may be more than one. And, you know, the fact that you grab one doesn't mean that this is my cigarette lighter and this is my drug lighter. You know, that doesn't necessarily, I just don't think that particular fact provides or adds much to the analysis overall, is what I'm trying to argue. And I'm running out of time. Unless the court has any further questions, Mr. Stonecipher asks this court to vacate his conviction and reverse the district court's order denying his motion to suppress.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, thank you both of you. This matter is under advisement. We'll render a decision in due course. Now in recess until 10 a.m.
All rise, please.